Hello, everybody, and welcome to the free preview for this month's episode of What a Cartoon Movie, all about Cowboy Bebop knocking on heaven's door. I'm one of your hosts for this one, Bob Mackey. Hello, Space Cowboy, and who's here with me today?
Space Cowboy, howdy to you, Bob. Henry Gilbert, hey.
And what you're about to hear is a special preview of our What a Cartoon Movie episode for Cowboy Bebop the movie, of course. And if you're interested in hearing the whole thing, the entire 4 hours and 22-ish minutes, You can go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons and sign up at the $10 level. You will then have access to that episode and the 10 previous episodes of What a Cartoon Movie. Each one is over 3 hours long, and access to all of the future episodes as long as you stay a patron. That's our deal to you.
That is correct. Whether you're a brand new patron or you're one of the $5 folks who wants to go up to $10 level, you will get a ton of new content you've never heard before. Over 30 hours of Patreon podcasting content, plus all of our previous video exclusives that we made at the $10 level before we started doing the What a Cartoon Movie. But I mean, if you sign up for this one to hear us talk about a classic anime like Cowboy Bebop, then I bet you'll also love to hear us talk about other classic anime like Kiki's Delivery Service and Akira. You can only hear that if you're a $10 patron. Or same with things that are basically anime, like Tiny Toon's Adventure.
That's essentially anime, but it's all waiting for you at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons at the $10 level. And that is a lot of bang for your buck in terms of sheer hours of podcast content. But this is our longest podcast ever.
Yeah.
As of now, I'm sure that will change in the future.
Bob especially worked so much on this one that you should just give us $10 as a thank you for how much you worked on
this. Don't you feel guilty? I worked so hard for you kids. No, I'm happy to do it. I was happy to revisit this movie. It's a great movie.
Yes.
And if you get the full version, you can hear our full conversation about the movie, a beat-by-beat breakdown of the movie with clips in our usual style. But this podcast contains just the history of the movie, which in itself is very long and interesting.
So I guess in the clip here, you're going to hear some of the history of it, of how Cowboy Bebop the movie came to be. And if you want to hear the whole thing, sign up or upgrade your current pledge to $10 a month at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. And it is very easy once you sign up to go through the old RSS feed to find the previous podcast for the movies, or to go onto the Patreon app or the Patreon website and find the What a Cartoon Movies by their tags in the posts.
So that's it for our little sales pitch, folks. We'll let you get into the free preview of the What a Cartoon Movie episode 4, Cowboy Bebop Knocking on Heaven's Door. We're talking about the Cowboy Bebop movie, Knockin' on Heaven's Door. And in doing research for this, because it came out so much later on DVD in the States, I had a different perspective on when this movie actually came out, an incorrect perspective. So I assume this was the result of it exploding in the West. Like, we have to make a movie because America likes it. That is not the case at all, because the movie was announced 6 months after the series ended in Japan. That was probably just as, like, VHS tapes were coming out in America.
Yeah, I think it was just a cult success in Japan that spread like wildfire, and so, or a medium fire. And I think, you know, Sunrise saw an opportunity there, a secondary opportunity. Usually, once your show gets canceled in the way it did in its broadcast, you don't get a movie. And so this was more of a second chance. And then probably, I would think it helped spur making the movie more, that they were seeing its popularity in America. Though, the Adult Swim debut of it came after the movie came out.
The next day in America was the time in Cowboy Bebop's life where it was the most relevant, because it was on Adult Swim. So it's so funny. So September 1st, the movie comes out in Japan. September 2nd, it starts running on Adult Swim.
It's a crazy
timeline. So yeah, I assumed it was a result of it, you know, taking off the West, but it was really just happening at the same time as the series was taking off in the West. So yes, this movie released September 1st, 2001 in Japan, and it wouldn't open in America until April 3rd, 2003 in the USA, a limited screening. And this just shows how mishandled anime movie screenings were until like last year or the year before.
Yeah, it's this, you know, we just saw Promare in a Fathom event that didn't, I think they finally the technology has caught up with the ability to air some, like one or two night showings of a anime film across America that we didn't have in 2003.
Yeah, and I think previously, so Fathom Events streams a lot of G-Kids movies, mm-hmm. and G-Kids usually picks up the license to lots of anime movies now that Disney doesn't do that anymore. So previously, there was going to be one day they were airing the dub and one day they were airing the sub for premiere, but I've been looking and it hasn't stopped airing.
Yeah.
It hasn't stopped streaming to theaters since then. I just saw it in Vancouver last week.
I think that it's spread like fire, that yes. That movie.
But the theme of the movie is fire. I stayed yeah. after the credits to listen to that interview.
That was so informative to know that the theme was fire. But anyway, yeah, that's, I think with Fathom and their stuff now that they can do a limited release, and if it does really awesome, then they can keep putting it out. But at the very least, you can see them on like a Tuesday or Thursday, which are the worst nights in theaters usually. And so,
and theaters are normally empty most of the time anyways. If there's not a Marvel movie or a Star Wars movie, there's no one there. We were just at a theater, and I was like, I could probably just walk in and no one would stop me. There are two teens working here.
That was, okay, that theater we have is crazy because they don't even have a ticket taker out front or a seller in front either. You just, like, if you're going to buy tickets, go to the concession stand.
It's really an honor system now.
They employ two people on a weekday. And it was fun to walk into the theater and be like, oh, it's just us, a otaku here. It's just the biggest nerds, and we're among friends there. But
not the biggest nerds, because we went to the dub screening.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Well, I've seen, you know, because we live in a more international city in Berkeley with all these students, I have found that sometimes when I go to the sub screening of stuff, you do get like Japanese, I think, students here, as in, like, you know, transfer students.
There's lots of Japanese students at Berkeley. But yeah, this really shows just how different the world is now, and better, because it got an extremely limited screening where it only made $1 million.
Yeah, they botched it. Real botched job on that. But I guess they didn't. No one knows how to sell. No one knew then how to sell anime movies unless they wanted to make it like a art house film, and that's not what, Cowboy Bebop's not art house.
And
that's
people,
not what they're going for.
I mean, things have changed, but people are still, I mean, by people, I mean executives who aren't people.
No.
They're still afraid of anime to the point where it's like, we will make Ghost in the Shell, but with a white lady, it'll be live action, it'll be 25 years after the anime movie. Like, they are still afraid, but back then they were even more afraid. And I was surprised, so it made $1 million in America with limited screening, and of course, in Japan, movies make a lot less because the population is much smaller than America. Yeah. But this movie only made $2 million in Japan, so that could not have possibly have made back the budget of this movie.
Doesn't look like it. Not based on that. Well, the secret of filmmaking is, though, like, as long as you can exist, as long as the company can exist, they'll make the money back. Like, Sunrise and Bandai Visual definitely made the money back.
They
on
sold
this.
Enough DVDs and stuff, I'm guessing.
It probably was more like, this is a pre-DVD screening of it. Like, it was more about DVD sales.
It was an ad for the DVD.
Hey, did you like this? 8,000 yen? Or I bet actually it was like 12,000 yen.
God. Yeah, it was over 100 bucks US. But just seeing how they... I'm sorry if I'm going on too long about this, but it's amazing how mishandled this was, because this movie opened in April 3rd in the USA, a limited screening. Adult Swim was never bigger at that time because Futurama and Family Guy started airing, of course. It had the pre-Futurama Family Guy era before that to amp things up. And if it had a wide release at that time, it probably could have made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. People would have seen this movie. It did not come anywhere near me.
Yeah, no, I count myself lucky that it had it relatively near me. I have been waiting since I looked it up. I definitely bought the Session 6 DVD as soon as it was available, May 2001. And so from then until April 2003, I was just like shaking with excitement for it. And there was one theater in like the 50-mile radius of my home. In there was a theater called Beaches of Jacksonville, which was the art house theater there. It's where, like, say, me and mom wanted to see every Oscar-nominated movie. We want to see, like, In the Bedroom. It's only playing there. Or the new
people
Woody...
are picketing outside.
Or the new Woody Allen crime is being filmed there. But so that's where Cowboy Bebop was, and I had to. It was like more than a 30-minute drive to go there and see it, and I felt very, like, I was lucky. I felt very lucky to get to see it in theaters. And I did hold off watching it for, I wanted to see it on the big screen. Like, I could have easily stolen a fan sub.
Oh, yeah.
On Kazaa long before that. And I was tempted, but I was like, do I really want to watch this off of some person's fan sub, or do I want to see it on a big screen?
So yeah, the DVD came out in June of 2003. I will say one of the all-time worst DVD covers for an anime thing. The new Blu-ray is very much improved, but the DVD cover, my blood turns cold when I see it because it is Spike, Faye, and Elektra on the cover, and there is the most Photoshop lens flare behind Elektra some reason.
Yeah,
it is like somebody's freshman level, like, Photoshop course we're seeing in front of us, their final project or something. It's disgusting. But yes, I'm going over this release information too long, but I just think, like, what a hugely missed opportunity, because people were terrified of anime. Sony could have released this in theaters with a wider release, but they're like, this weird anime thing, I don't know about it. And so one thing I found, and I posted about this on Twitter very recently, was that in 2003, Spirited Away had just won the Oscar. So every normie-ass critic knew what anime was for the first and probably only time. Mm-hmm.
They knew that one.
Yeah. So I went to Anime News Network, and I went back to 2003, and I looked at the blurbs of reviews. And the first one mentioned Spirited Away. I was like, come on. And then more of them did. Like, every normie critic named, like, this is not Spirited Away. Excuse me. Where's Totoro? He didn't show up once. I think it's a mistake.
I mean, these were the last of the newspaper-first critics. They were losing their edge then, and they didn't have to. But they were so used to not having to know these things. But also, though, giving people a guilt trip for not knowing, like, oh, you've never seen a Godard film. It's like, well, you didn't do your fucking research on this.
Yeah.
Like, why should I see a Godard
film? Just the sheer ignorance on display. But yeah, it's like, you don't compare this to a Ghibli movie for many reasons. The audience, the purpose, the what it's actually based on. There are so many reasons why.
Yeah,
and it's so hilarious that Spirited Away was their only point of comparison.
Yeah, that's like, it's... I mean, there's a certain level of, like, xenophobic ignorance in that that is just distasteful. Which, like, I know I'm sounding like a giant weeb with this, but it's also like, if it was a French film and they're like, oh, well, this is not like M. Hulot's Holiday.
Yeah, that's my one go-to French movie. I've seen that trilogy. It's great.
Or like, this isn't Amancord. What is this? Like, it's just, it's, they don't understand the wide range of things that could be in a medium. And like, and, it does. I mean, it doesn't help that anime can be tropey at times, so it falls into that. But then again, like, what American film isn't the explosions green screen fest now? Like, they're all that. Yeah.
I think there's a real line in the sand drawn where, like, everyone approaching 40 or over 40, most of them understand anime, but a lot of them are like, oh yeah, those are those pervert cartoons that are gross and disgusting. Yeah. But everyone 10 years younger than us is like, of course, yes, I grew up watching anime. Anime is fun. I still watch it. I've got a Crunchyroll account. So I think, like, the tide is turning, but there are still lots of people around our age that are just like, no, those are gross, weird cartoons for perverts, and I don't like them.
Well, and, you know, our beloved Mystery Science Theater was one of those groups, too. Like, they did not have nice things to say about anime that, like, with some jokes, I bet they regret.
Oh, for sure, yes.
So it was normal then, and, like, I think that shame... It affected the marketing from Sony, too, but it just ends up like, well, then why'd you guys license this goddamn movie anyway? But I think, too, then, you know, from a budget standpoint, the price of making, like, getting a film, creating film canisters that can be shipped all around America, like, the price point was just too much for anybody but a giant company like TriStar Sony to do, and... but I think, too, that, like, Sony now, they own, like, Aniplex. They have a part of Funimation.
Oh,
like, Sony is very involved in anime, but I think that's the Japan side of Sony, while this was being handled by the Hollywood side of Sony. And, like, Sony doesn't own Sunrise. That's Bandai Visual, but it's just, it's complicated, I think. But I think the American side that was trying to market this, I think also... You know, it's crazy to think that, like, they were putting out the movie when they don't own the TV show. So they're not, they've got no footage of the TV show they can hook into. And they're not, like, if they sell more copies of the TV show in America based on the release of the film, what do they care? Like, they're not making money off of it. So why try? I'm honestly shocked that they went to the trouble of getting the full dub cast for this.
Yeah,
back when
yeah, me
they,
too.
Why would they were so haphazard with everything else. Why'd they bother? Other than probably that dub cast was cheaper than a union one.
Oh, for sure. For sure, yes. They could hire all the fun pseudonyms we see in the credits. So yeah, let's get into the production history of the movie. We'll try to make it interesting, but it's so fairly straightforward. There's like no drama, no surprises, no struggle. I mean, they worked very hard to make this. So the idea for this movie was always in the mind of the director, Shinichiro Watanabe. He's a series director of the series, and he's also the director of the movie. Basically, to him, and I think we mentioned this in the history, again, if we repeat things we say in the TV show history, I apologize, but we are more than a year later, so it's very, very possible. But every episode of Bebop to him was like a mini movie with like a different genre and a different intent. And he thought, naturally, Bebop could be a movie because I've made all these mini movies.
Yeah, yeah. And also, opportunity-wise, like, it's, you know, Japan... The anime industry doesn't make a ton of movies that aren't just out of the, you know, the yearly Conan movie or the yearly Lupin movie or the yearly Pokemon movie, like an original or at the very least first film in a series. Like, that is a big risk. And so to even get the opportunity to be the top guy director on an anime film basically never happens for animators.
And I never got the handle on how popular the series was in Japan, but upon reading the history of it, only a few episodes actually aired on regular TV because of the content. It was like too violent, too sexy. The rest of it was offloaded to the satellite station that super, super late at night. So I think that helped affect the popularity of this movie in Japan. So I have no idea how this was greenlit.
Yeah.
Given that it was a relatively obscure and expensive series.
It had to be the VHS sales. Like, I think it had to, and the growing DVD market. Like, this, I think this definitely sold a lot of DVDs for people. I mean, it was... I'm pretty sure Bebop was the first anime DVD I purchased.
Oh, yeah. I'm almost positive it was for me, too.
Yeah. And I mean, the boxes we got here, sessions instead of volumes, like, that's how they were sold in Japan, too. They're very similar, like, box layout and everything. I'm glad they just copied it in America.
I think there were, like, 8 or 10 instead of the 6 we mercifully got.
Yes, yeah.
And that was the start of a new era, too. Like, how about this? The whole series is on 6 instead of 8.
Yeah, I felt like such a treat of, like, wait, 5 episodes are on this DVD?
Oh, that first disc is amazing. Yeah, so, yeah, the movie, like I said before, was announced in September of 99. The series wrapped up in April of 99. And it began production in July of 2000. And from what I've read, it had a much longer production schedule than most anime movies. So a little over a year.
Yeah.
To make 2 hours of glorious animation.
Which I, you know, from what you hear about how long it takes to make a Disney feature length film in the United States, it's about triple that. Like, a Frozen from conception and script to release, I think it was more like 4 years.
Yeah, and things always spend like years in development too. Mm-hmm. There are different versions of things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of that length of time could just be executive bloat and that you have to take notes from 8 billion people before you can release it and then get approval from every manufacturer of merchandise there is. I think there's a little less fat in the very no less commercialized tube that is the anime industry, but just fewer people causing
that tube is more lubricated. You can slide down it a lot easier.
Whoa.
Not to get gross here. So this is the very first production of the animation studio Bones, who is now a mega company.
Love Bones.
It was co-produced with Sunrise, who is the producer of the Cowboy Bebop series. And the three folks who founded Bones came from that. So those three people are Masahiko Minami, Hiroshi Osaka, and of course, Shinichiro Watanabe. So those are the three folks who came from Bones. Sorry, who came from Sunrise to form Bones, and apparently there was no bad blood from them leaving and forming a new studio because they worked together to make this.
Yeah, yeah. I did see that, like, Bandai has some investment in Bones, so it's like it's at least a partial ownership. I think that's another reason they didn't have to worry. They're like, well, and maybe it could be, I think of it akin to, like, Clover getting created in that. These were the top people, but they wanted more, and they couldn't get it at Sunrise or with Emotion or whatever. There's too many logos in this movie.
Yeah, this movie starts off with a lot of logos. I love that Emotion Easter Island head, though. I don't even know what Emotion is. I should look that up. They make Easter Island heads.
But yeah, Bones, I mean, this is quite a first project to do, but also one that lets them set up a studio, but also do a thing they know how to do.
Yeah. And if you want to learn more about Bones, go back to our recent Full Metal Alchemist Wars Brotherhood episode, we talk about the history of that studio. And essentially, to kind of sum it up here, their first mega hit was the first Full Metal Alchemist in 2003. Mm-hmm. And they're currently riding high on My Hero Academia.
Oh,
and they're essentially five studios in one studio that make a ton of stuff.
Bones is some of the best in anime right now. Like, they really... I was a little worried after Wolf's Rain. I didn't know. They seemed to be all over the place when I looked at their releases. Like, they definitely...
You didn't like Scrapped Princess?
They have a lot of... it's like a shotgun, just a big approach for stuff. But when they landed in, like... especially, like... definitely, My Hero Academia is like the next Full Metal Alchemist for them of just a popular action series. Though this is like the brightest and most colorful thing Bones has ever done, and it's such a gorgeous show. So then, but it's more directed at teens, unlike the more mature, cool stoner vibe of Cowboy Bebop, you know. Mm-hmm.
So Watanabe had a lot more time and money to play with, obviously, so he wanted the Bebop movie to have more of a live-action feel, so even more, where the series, of course, is emulating a lot of live-action references and live-action things that Watanabe loved, like Kung Fu movies and noir and Dirty Harry stuff. So what he really wanted from this movie, and he really got it out of this movie, was, so one, more technical effects, more cells, and also what I see a lot in this movie, which they didn't do that much of in the series, is literally emulating the effects of different lenses. You see, like, the backgrounds kind of warp in different ways, and just, like, they're trying to emulate, like, what would a camera capture instead of just having a flat background? Of course, the edges of the screen be a little warped because of the lens. So I see that a lot in this movie.
Yeah, which I don't think they did digitally in most cases. It looks drawn. It looks like from the pen. Like you said, Cells, this as a 2001 release, like, this is coming at the tail end of Cell production on animes of this scale.
Just like with the series, though, there's, like, a little bit of digital animation pushing its way in. It's like the future is encroaching on Cowboy Bebop, but it's still very nice and very beautiful cells. I had to watch an illegal stream of this because I should have mentioned this earlier. It's not streaming anywhere. I did not have time to purchase a Blu-ray. It should be somewhere for digital purchase, but it's not, and that really annoys me.
I blame Sony for that too. I think some license ran out and there's not the new license yet on digital availability. Like, they also were... I bought a new Blu-ray of it 2 years ago just because it was $7. I was like, well, I don't have it on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I mean, currently it still is because all physical media is just on a fire sale until we stop making it. So,
though I do think in some specialized set that came out in the U.S., they finally were able to package the show with the movie on sale. But, like... that I'm jealous of folks in other regions where the show and the movie are licensed by the same company so they can be released together with similar things. Like, even the logo is just off on it. Like, it just, one of the biggest sighs I gave during the movie was just seeing, like, the just very first drafty, the movie come up on it.
Barf,
just left.
Barf.
Yeah, but. The art style they used to emulate movie camera stuff, it also bucked with my mind in that I remembered the TV show in widescreen. And so when I watched it again, I was like, oh, yeah, no, it was a 4:3 show.
They were in a little box. So, yeah, you see a lot of things they didn't have a lot of time to do in the series and that they tried to do. So, like, in the fight scenes, I noticed the camera is moving as if a cameraman is trying to get them in the frame as they're darting around. It's really cool. So, like, very subtle things you don't notice because you don't think, like, oh, yeah, this is all thought about ahead of time. There's not a man moving a camera in front of two people. It's somebody, like, you know, laying out these shots and how the camera will move.
Yeah, same with the swordfish. In the swordfish flight sequence, there's one scene where the camera is just so far back and it's like... you can feel that it feels like the cameraman is trying to find where the swordfish went. It's like, oh, there it is.
Yeah,
and it moves. Like, which that is so antithetical to the normal teaching of animation, which is you're working so hard to draw this, you need people to see it. So instead, working against people's ability to see the thing you went to the trouble to draw, that is a very punk rock idea there.
Spending extra money to emulate the flaws of actual filmmaking when you have a completely controlled environment for that. It's really cool. So the director wanted the movie to have an Arabic flair, mostly because to him, the Arab world was very alien and foreign. Of course, this was released on September 1st, 2001. And I think for most people, the Arab world will become much more relevant very soon after, literally 10 days later.
Yeah.
So this has a different flavor now when it's about a terrorist. You're in a Moroccan part of Mars, I guess. Just so many things that don't have the effect that was intended are happening in this movie.
Yeah, I can pretty clearly recall, like, in September, well, it would have been September 2nd in the U.S., knowing that it was out and thinking, like, oh, man, I can't wait to see it. And then to have 4 days, 9 days later, the 9/11 happens. And the more I learned about this film in the year and a half before the U.S. release, I was like, oh.
Yeah. Huh. And I could chalk it up to negligence why this came out so much later in America, but I think it was like, oh, no, we can never show this. Take it down, remove it, destroy it.
That is how people felt of like, can we even say the word terrorism?
Can we release a Bomberman game?
Yeah.
It's too sensitive.
Yeah, exactly.
I made that up, but I assume that was a conversation that was had.
Well, a thing that did happen to Cowboy Bebop was the Teddy Bomber episode didn't air for years on Adult Swim.
That's why I thought of it. Just the idea of a bomb was too much.
I mean, he does blow up a thing with two towers at the end of that episode.
And I think, am I wrong? Do we see the destroyed World Trade Center in this movie?
Well,
it's two large towers.
Yes, yeah.
I don't know where Spike is. Is he on Earth in that spot?
No.
I guess we'll talk about it.
I can just say it now. But yeah, that was a scene that really got me in watching it this time. But it also got me in the theater in 2003 was, after all this terrorism stuff and everything, it is Spike recovering, sitting by the water, and Jed is talking to him.
Yeah.
And they're both looking across the water at two towers. And it's like that, again, this was released 9 days before it happened. This has nothing to do with the World Trade Center, but like, that image evokes it, at least with American eyes, it does.
And it took me about until maybe 3/4 of the way through the movie. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is taking place on Mars. I totally forgot. Like, they're on Mars.
Well, because design-wise, they really get away from the futurism of the show. Well, not really, but they definitely dialed down the futurism of the TV series for the movie, which I think was intentional to make it more for an issue with this film, though I want to say straight up, still love this movie. Mm-hmm. But I do think an issue with it is that they were still trying to be inviting to people who never saw the show. So that's why they had less of the weird things that make the world of Cowboy Bebop what it is.
Like the here's how the world is different now scenes.
Yeah, yeah. Here's what a video screen does, or here's what that amazing moment in My Funny Valentine where she's like, well, that's a TV and that's a food machine. And he's like, well, no, that's a dishwasher. That's a clothes washer and that's the phone. And it was stuff like that that you don't expect how futurism works now.
So Watanabe went to Morocco for basically the animation equivalent of location scouting. So just basically doing research, taking photos. And one interesting thing from this is that Rashid in the film is based on his guide in Morocco. Just a very amiable guy everyone likes. A very flamboyant
That's
guy.
That's really cool. Yeah, Rashid comes off as so specific and not in a way you'd think of, which I think, too, you know, he's doing one better than most American productions, how they put Arab people in their movies. You know, that's I think that there's definitely a little bit of Orientalism to the Arab world. They approach in this, but
it's better than just like these people are dirty and they want to kill me get now.
No, it's more like, oh, this walking through a bazaar is fun. And look at all these things we can shop for. Oh, you guys like beans, like that kind of stuff. Honestly, the indigenous people of America get a little more orientalized than the Arabs.
Yeah. So because the film happened so soon after the series, very little of the staff changed over. Again, this is a very straightforward history. There's no drama or anything. So the only major roles that changed, I think because the people went on to different projects, were the art director and the set designer. So the director, of course, Shinichiro Watanabe. The screenplay is by the person who wrote the scenario for the series, Keiko Nobumoto. And the animation director and character designer was Toshihiro Kawamoto, who's amazing.
Oh,
actually, before the movie came out, I saw him at Otakon 2001.
Oh, wow.
And that was like, so just before September 11th, a lot of Japanese guests came to America. And then it took until around 2004 before they started coming back to America. So
makes sense.
It was him at that convention. It was Kazuya Suramaki from Fooly Cooly. So many huge guests were at that convention. And I went to his panel, and I think he showed a preview for the movie that was not out yet. It was like the Japanese trailer for the movie, and everyone was freaking out about that. So it was like August of 2001.
Oh, man, that's wild. You know, now it's hard for international guests to come, but that's because of work visa stuff being very tightened down by our Homeland Security.
Are these people spies?
What if that anime director or this pro wrestler actually wanted to destabilize our country?
I don't trust them. Nope. So yes, and of course the music is by Yoko Kanno once again, doing great music.
You know, I wondered sometimes if they put this out mainly just to sell more soundtracks. Like, well, if we make this movie, we can put out a 5-song soundtrack album, then the full album, and then a double album of all the other songs that we didn't put in, and then sell more. Like,
it's all merchandising.
Yeah, I think the record industry. Well, I think Bandai normally how they would commercialize their stuff from the Gundam model doesn't really work with Bebop. They tried to sell Swordfish stuff, and I bet they sold a few, but that wasn't what people wanted. It like the cool thing was the music more than anything. I think that got bought.
And there were video games. Like there was the first video game was for the PlayStation. And the second one was for the PlayStation 2. And I understand why the first one didn't come out, but the second one came out in 2005. Mm-hmm. That never made it to America. Another missed opportunity.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Really wasteful.
I'm sure the games were bad, but I would have played them.
It could be like licensing was just in a weird place then. Like, it's who weird owns because Bebop, who does?
They brought over a Lupin game when it was airing on Adult Swim.
Oh, yeah.
For PS2.
That was
like, so weird. Weird time to be alive.
Yeah. Look, we're not the executives who give these approvals of what gets localized and what doesn't. Yeah.
It's true. No one owes you, no one's to blame. Sit for bad.